everybody, and welcome to Calibrating Your Compass, a podcast series all about the J.J. Taylor leadership competencies. For the next 7 or 8 episodes, we are going to be exploring our leadership competencies, what they are, what they mean to us, and how you as a leader can come to embrace them. My name is Jeff Weaver. I'm the training director here at J.J. Taylor and your host, and I'm joined by two gentlemen who helped put this all together for us back in the day when it kicked off. And first amongst those is Bob Briggs of PeopleWorks. Bob, welcome. Thank you for being a part of us.
Jeff, I'm really excited to be here and have these great conversations about these competencies.
Me too. I am very excited to be able to get this together. This is a series I've wanted to do for a long time, and I was very excited that you and Matt were willing to join us. And Matt Briggs is here with us as well. Matt, welcome, and glad to have you with us too.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to having a Cigar City and talk about leadership and how leaders at J.J. Taylor continue to lead in that way and make a difference for the company. So this is going to be fun.
I always recommend you have a beer nearby when we start podcasting. It makes everything a little more fun. Well, thank you both for being here. And again, what we're here to talk about for this series, this is our first limited series run with Brew University Podcasting, and it's all about our 7 leadership competencies. You know, for the last 10 years or so, we've been working inside this competency model. It drives what we look at when we determine how leaders perform and if they're effective at their job. It really is the definition of how we do our work, not just what we do, which is sell beer, but how we do that the first choice way. The leadership competencies define that for our managers. And so I'm really excited to be able to take a deeper dive and look more into this because it's been a long time since we put these in place. But, you know, for some of those folks who weren't here when we first started down this path, they may not realize the history and the origins of this and why we chose what we did and who was a part of it and how it all came together. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So our first episode here is Why Competency Matters and a look at how we arrived at our 7 leadership competencies. And so I'll start, Bob, with the question that some people who weren't here that back then may not know, but tell us how you came to start working with J.J. Taylor. What was the original goal and your mission and how you were brought into the mix and what you came on board to do?
Well, it goes back to, I think, sometime around 2009, sat down with John Taylor and Henry Desplaines at the time. And John at that time was very passionate about building a great place to work. And so that to him meant I've got to have the right culture. And he had spent a lot of time with the leadership team back then in really kind of defining what that would look like. What's his vision? What are the core values? What's the mission and vision of the organization? And I think the missing piece for him at that time was, you know, I've got the right idea. I want to build a great place to work, but I need some help in getting this stuff into the hearts and minds of J.J. Taylor employees.
Absolutely. You know, we've had our mission and our core values for a long time. But what's great about a competency model is it really adds that extra layer of what we expect in terms of behavior and performance, where a mission statement like being first choice or the core values that we have sort of points us in the direction we want to go. I think the leadership competencies are more almost like a turn-by-turn direction of what we expect from a manager in order to be successful. And it does give you that extra layer of culture that sort of rounds out and fills in the gaps of what does it mean to be first choice? Well, this is a great example of what it actually means.
You bet. And really, as John and I talked about the culture, there are really 4 pieces to that culture. First thing is mission. You know, what are we in business to do? What are we all about? Second is vision. What do we want our future state to look like? And John was very passionate about building an outstanding high performance organization. The third piece are the core values. How do we want people to behave? And he had developed, I think, a really nice set of core values that are in place today. And then the fourth piece, critical piece, is how do you want your leaders to lead? And so we wanted to build that J.J. Taylor leadership model that was aligned with mission, vision, and their core values. And so we spent a lot of time with the leadership team back then really kind of identifying what those leadership competencies need to be. And that makes up the J.J. Taylor leadership model. Those 4 pieces combined is really how you implement a high-performance culture.
Sort of all leading to the place that we call ambassadorship now, right? It's that idea of how to become an ambassador. Well, this is the last step in the process. These three plus this one more with leadership competencies gives us the four things we need to be ambassador leaders within the organization.
Yep. One of the things we talked a lot about, even back then, was the importance of leaders understanding that they are representatives of the company, much like an ambassador to the UK or any other ambassadorship. But it's a caring about the organization and understanding as a leader, you represent the company to the employees.
I think representative is such a great piece of why we use the term ambassador, because it really is, you know, when we think about an ambassador in terms of, you know, country to country, it's someone, yes, they represent our interests and they're there to help navigate tricky situations. But most importantly, they're typically people that we consider exemplary of our values and our culture. And so I've always really loved the term ambassador as sort of the pinnacle of what our managers can become, where they really are not just great managers, but they're great managers that we would set out as an example to others and that we would put out in front and say, this is who we want to be. This is what we want to be known for and known as, is an individual like this.
I agree. And that's why it's so important for leaders to model those core values 24/7. They really have a key responsibility to show the organization by their behavior that these things are important. What they do is actually more important than what they say.
Absolutely. Now, 2008, 2009, that was a bit of a tumultuous time around here. We had just finished up the acquisition on the east coast of Florida from Thies that would bring the Treasure Coast office into the mix. And we had just done a pretty big acquisition up in Minnesota of converting Eastside Beverage over to officially J.J. Taylor Distributing. So there was a lot going on in terms of new managers in the mix and a lot of uncertainty and changes going on, especially in the Florida division with the acquisition of this new group and sort of the plan to try and unify the leadership across the entire state. How much of that played into your coming into the mix, and what were some of the challenges you saw as we were, you know, really trying to wrap our hands around the kind of company we wanted to build in this new paradigm with all these new pieces and new players?
Yep. Well, I think it was a critical time to come in, because acquisitions are always a threat to the culture. These new organizations, they really don't understand or didn't understand what J.J. Taylor was all about or what we were trying to accomplish. And the only thing that they knew is, you know, how do we do things at Thies? And, unfortunately, the way things were done at Thies were different than the things we wanted done at J.J. Taylor. And so we had to make sure that, you know, they were involved in the process, that they embraced the things that we were teaching and things we were saying. And so from a timing perspective, we kind of caught them at the early stages so that they really were indoctrinated into the J.J. Taylor way of leading. And it worked out very well.
Indeed, because we've had some of our highest performing individuals across Florida have come out of that division and that location, and because they've adopted the method and become part of the first choice vision and just embraced it wholeheartedly. And today there's definitely some all-stars there that are, you know, Thies legacies, but they're full blood J.J. Taylor through and through now. And it's, you know, no small part because of what you guys did and because of the roadmap here that you laid out. So what exactly, how would you define the leadership competencies? You know, we use the term and we know what the seven are, and we'll cover them here in a minute. But from your perspective, what do you really see the competencies being as how they fit into our bigger part of the plan?
Well, the leadership competencies, or the leadership model, if you will, are critical to building the culture. And we want to create an environment where the leaders understand that they need to lead the J.J. Taylor way. Now, does that mean that we want to treat everybody the same? We want to lead everybody the same? Absolutely not. But there are certain basic core principles in these competencies that are universal, that are critical to building a great place to work, to critical to building the right culture, that we wanted to make sure that every leader in the company was exposed to this, embraced the principles, and then was able to share what they've learned with other people in the organization. C- critical part of the process.
Absolutely. So let's talk about them. Let's talk about the seven leadership competencies. Do I want to put you guys on the spot and quiz you if you know them, or should I just rattle them off for you?
I think we know them pretty well. Not only did we get it into the hearts and minds of the J.J. Taylor leaders, but certainly as you teach it, it becomes kind of impressed on your brain. So I think we have them down, Jeff.
Okay. Well, for those of you who are listening in and maybe haven't spent as much time with them yet as we have seven leadership competencies, beginning with instilling trust, then communicating effectively, then leading change, customer focused, cultivating individual talents, facilitating team success, and achieving results. And these are the seven pillars that we have, you know, built everything else upon. So how did we pick these particular seven? How was it decided that these were the seven things that leaders needed to be focused on? Why did we maybe pick some of the words that we did, and how did we key in on this set of competencies? Because for those of us, you know, I've done competency work in the past in other companies. I worked a lot with Leadership Architect and some of the stuff out of Lumberger and such. And there are literally hundreds of potential competencies that you could pick from. How did we get to this set of seven?
Great question. And really, there are, as you pointed out, there are many, many competencies, but there really are only about, you can put them all in about 15 buckets of things that you can actually measure. So after a lot of discussion with the key leaders in the company, understanding the vision that they had for the culture, a lot of debate, sometimes heated debate, we came up with what we thought were the seven critical core skill sets that every J.J. Taylor needed to embrace, and then execute on to be successful in the company. And so every organization should have a set of competencies for their leadership team. They can be different. And in many cases, they are different, but we had consensus from the key people at J.J. Taylor at that time that these were the things that were most important. And I guess another thought there is that, you know, you can have too many competencies or too few competencies and really confuse the issue. So we were very, very careful that we wanted a short list of the things that were most important. And I think the work that the leadership team did at that time was outstanding. I think these competencies are the right competencies for your organization. And I think the ability and the desire of the leadership team to embrace these competencies and use them was very impressive. I think, you know, if you look across the leadership team at that time, the buy-in was excellent. Now, part of that is because the people at the very top, and I'm thinking of Jay Martin in particular, who was very passionate. He, of course, we all know how passionate Jay is about leadership, how effective he is as a leader. But he was able to take these seven competencies and really drive those into the organization, in large part because he was modeling in a great way what those leadership competencies meant. And of course, if it's important to him, it's going to be important to other people in the organization.
And Bob, to add to that, right? I mean, any organization or lots of organizations have core values, they have leadership competencies, but they're not modeled and people don't know what they are. And so I think the order really mattered at the time, right? You know, with trust and communication as the top two, because to drive change effectively, you had to have a high trust environment. You had to be able to communicate effectively. And then to drive change in how we treat our customers, how we develop talent, that drives how our teams work effectively and ultimately achieves results. And so all of you that are listening to this, you know, a good thing for you all to remember when you think of these competencies and the J.J. Taylor core values, number one, do you understand what they mean? If you know what they are, so you got to know what they are, you need to understand what they mean, then you need to live by them, and then you need to hold your people accountable to living by them. Even if you're not in a formal leadership role, you can model these behaviors because, like John Maxwell says, leadership is influence. No matter where you are in the organization, you are influencing someone in the organization. These leadership competencies and behaviors can help you do that.
Absolutely, Matt. I absolutely agree. And that brings us to two things that I do want to key in on for sure. One is the order, because I do think that's worth pointing out. These are sort of ranked if you were, or at the very least, I would say they flow. You know, I oftentimes when we teach this in Great Manager Now, we talk a lot about these and we get to the last one, which is achieves results. I tell our new managers, you know, achieving results is the natural out product of doing all these other things right. If you do all these other things right, you're going to be able to achieve results and the right way. And so I do think it's interesting how the list came together. So maybe tell us a little bit about how the rank order came into play and what the conversations were like at the time as we put that list to paper.
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct that they they are in order of importance. And of course, the first one is trust. And it is by far the most important of the competencies. If you can't earn the trust of the people around you as a leader, nothing else is going to work. And so that's kind of step one in the process. And very, very closely linked to that is your ability to communicate. And I think we all know, or I hope we know, that the most important aspect of communicating is listening. And most of us as leaders, we're pretty good at getting things done and being aggressive and working at a fast pace and being competitive and all of those things, type A individuals. And unfortunately, that's not consistent with someone that listens. And one of the fundamental principles of leadership is being able to listen and learn. Okay, let me say that again. One of the most important principles of leadership is listening and learning. And it's something that most all of us have to work on. I don't, of all of the coaching and development that we do and have done over the years, we've run across very few leaders that have really develop the skill set of being able to learn. Communication is absolutely critical. Once you get the trust and the communication correctly, then the others kind of fall in place where they're not necessarily in critical order, whether it's customer or leading change. Those are obviously two very big ones. But you know, in the J.J. Taylor culture, customer is absolutely critical. So understanding how to create an environment of serving customers at a very high level is also a very important a competency to learn and embrace.
I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. And I think that also taps into the other part of that Matt alluded to and that I want to make sure we touch on, which is, you know, there's a benefit to these, whether you are in a leadership role or not, whether you are directly supervising people or not. And there's a reason that we continue to grow Great Manager and these competency expectations outside of people just who have direct reports. If you're in a position in the company where you have to work across teams, across departments, and where influence matters, these are all the same things that are going to gain you that influence that you need to get the job done. It's not just about the direct relationship between a person in a supervisory role and the people they supervise. This is really about who we want to be as leaders and what is the culture and the mindset we're building. And that exists regardless of what the org chart has to say.
Absolutely. We lead from where we are. And that can be the president of the company or it can be somebody that's driving a forklift. Because we know that leadership is influence. And if you think about it, we really don't have any authority. We have no authority over our boss. We certainly don't have any authority over our peers. And we really don't have any authority over our direct reports, because if they don't like what we're doing, if they don't like us, they'll just quit and go to work somewhere else. So, you know, the idea of forcing people to do things, of lording over people, or, you know, being more of a command and control leader, that just isn't the most effective way to do things. You've got to be able to create an environment so that people want to do the work, not feel that they've got to be forced to do the work.
When we teach Great Manager Now, we call that the difference between positional power and persuasional power. Positional being the power you have by virtue of the title, and persuasional being the influence you have by virtue of who you are as a leader. And persuasional power is what gets things done. At the end of the day, you couldn't be more right. It's not about positional. Positional only gets you about this far. And people who have nothing but positional power, I always say, that's just your boss. And nobody likes their boss, right? But people with persuasional power get the job done, and their people do the right thing even when their backs are turned. And that's always the key, is do you have a team? Are you leading a team that's going to behave even when you're not looking over their shoulder?
Right. And that's a key driver of culture. Right. So we want to create an environment where people want to do a good job. They want to be successful. They want to go the extra mile for customers. That's what this whole project was about, going back to 2008, to create a high performance culture where people can do their best work, they can go the extra mile, and oh, by the way, at the end of the day, we execute in a way that gives us competitive advantage. And, you know, I think in if you look at the AJJ Taylor's numbers over the years, their ability to gain market share, that comes directly from building a culture that's, in my view, is second to none.
Absolutely agree. So as we head down this road over the next several episodes, you know, we're going to be talking about each one of these individual leadership competencies one by one. But I wanted to sort of ask one more question here up front, which is, are competencies sort of like talents? You know, with talents, we often talked about, and we talked about talent models here for a long, long time. We've sort of shifted a little bit now. But, you know, when people think about talents, they tend to think about innate skill and something that you sort of have in you, and, you know, the ability to speak well in front of a group, or the ability to be likable to a certain extent, or sort of talents that some people are just given, you know, God-given natural ability is higher and such, and it can be tougher to develop. Are competencies like talents in that what you have as a starting point is kind of where you're going to be? Or do you guys believe this is something that really with training and practice and focus can, you know, show improvement and show growth, and something that if you, you know, struggle in any one of these seven areas, there's always a way and a room to improve? What are your thoughts?
Great question. And it's, I know it's debated. I know there are different sides of this issue, but in my opinion, to be a great leader, you really have to have some level of leadership aptitude. It's just something that you're born with. Now, does aptitude make you a great leader? Absolutely not. But it does matter if you've got the basic wiring to be able to be able to lead. You know, I'd like to play in the NBA and make $40 million a year and compete against LeBron, but I'm 5'10" and I can't jump, right? So not likely that all the practice and the coaching and the training I could possibly get is going to enable me to be able to compete at that level. Well, it's the same thing with leadership. And so what we need are people that have the basic gift of leadership, the inherent aptitude to be able to learn how to lead. And then what these competencies do is they give you a how do I do this? How do I lead effectively? And so there are principles, there are tools that you need to learn and embrace and use. And you know, it's amazing to me that as people take that seriously and they really are passionate about learning these principles and then applying, all become very successful as leaders.
Sort of that old adage that practice beats talent when talent doesn't practice. Matt?
Yeah, and to add to that, Jeff, it doesn't matter where you are in the organization, if you're a frontline supervisor or you're the president of the company, I mean, you should have time you're spending daily, weekly, monthly on continuing to hone your leadership skills and improving your effectiveness. I mean, Bob talked about listening and learning earlier. No matter where you are in an organization, whether you're a driver, a dispatcher, an executive, an admin, an HR, an operations, I mean, you should always have the mindset of continuous improvement and how do we continue to grow, especially as leaders. And so looking at where we are, you know, hey, maybe you rank yourself a 5 as a leader right now. How do you go from a 5 to a 7? If you're an 8, how do you get to a 10 and have that incremental improvement and continue to learn and develop to hone your craft as a leader? Because one thing, the work environment changes, our teams change, our responsibilities change. And so what may have worked well for us as a leader around communicating effectively 2 years ago didn't work the same way in the last, you know, 15 months in COVID, or may not work the same a year from now. So we just have to continue to refine that craft, and that's what the competencies help do, is give us that foundation of JJ Taylor to say, hey, this is how we build trust, and then apply it to those different environments that we're in.
I think that's such an outstanding point, Matt, because you're exactly right. This is something that even if you're good at them, the world changes, the methods change. You know, the way we communicated pre-COVID is not the way we're going to communicate during or even after COVID. So even if you feel like you've got a good natural talent in one of these, there is always something more to learn, more to gain, and worthy of practice. Because again, even having natural skill is great, but if you're not practicing this stuff, you're going to get rusty. You know, even if it's there, there may still be a high level of skill to tap back into, but we all get rusty if we don't. And I think that really sums up why we decided to do this podcast series, because for those of our leaders who have been here a while, who were here when this first started and know the competencies and understand the expectation, this is an opportunity to revisit that stuff and make sure that you're staying sharp and make sure that you're staying focused. And, you know, like Zig Ziglar famously said, motivation, much like bathing, requires regular use. And so if you're not regularly revisiting this stuff, it'll start to stink on you. And this is an opportunity for that. If you're here a long time and you know this well, but you need a refresher, here we are. And if you're brand new to the company or new to your role and as a leader, and you're hearing this stuff for the first time, this is your chance to really absorb it the right way. And if you're not yet a manager or in a positional authority position in the company, a supervisor, a team lead, anything like that, but you want to be, this is an opportunity to listen in and hear what is it we're going to be looking for and expect, so that when you're ready to demonstrate those skills to us, we'll be ready to watch you step up and advance your career as well. So I think this is a great podcast series and a great set of topics for anyone, whether you are a leader by title or by influence. This is an opportunity to see what it is we expect, how we want our culture to work, and hear from the people who helped put it all together what it means to be a great leader here at JJ Taylor. So I'm super excited about this series. We're going to be diving in one by one to each of the leadership competencies over the next few weeks. And you can listen along with us and hopefully be able to get a lot of understanding and knowledge and a chance to practice those skills and make them sharper. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this one. It's been a great walk through memory lane and an opportunity to really talk about where these leadership competencies came from, how they came together, and why they're so important. So thank you both for being here and helping us really recap the history from the gentlemen who were in the driver's seat and who were really there as it all came together. Bob, thank you again for your time here today and making this all happen and for helping bring forth these competencies into our world.
Well, I have to tell you, Jeff, it was such a joy to be able to work on these things for or with JJ Taylor. It was a lot of hard work, but really great work, and it's really made a difference in the company.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. Matt, thank you as well for being here and helping us relive the history of how this all began.
Sure thing, Jeff. And it's neat. You know, these were first developed at JJ Taylor on the First Choice Culture, gosh, over 10 years ago now. And so now that we're in 2021, still talking about them and they're relevant, and leaders are leading by modeling these is pretty cool. So it's neat to see it's sustainable.
It is sustainable. It has driven us. And I think really it's the secret sauce that continues to keep this company at the forefront of the industry. And that is in no small part to the work that you gentlemen did for us. So thank you for being here for it. I look forward to talking about all of these in depth as we continue forward in our adventure and calibrate your compass. We'll see you next time.